Okay, start with that then.
Well, I was in a station at Templemore, Tipperary County, Tipperary. I was in the North Hampshire Regiment. And I was only about 16 in, or a little bit more. And I was detailed to go with a Lance Corporal named Pettit to take dispatches to a place called Limerick, which was the Army headquarters. So they dished us out in the stores, they give us all a loaf and a lump of cheese. You know, and I dished out what they call a Martin Henry in the Army. This is a suit that fits everybody. You see, it's a mustard-coloured affair. And if you've got safety pins and all sorts of things, you can make it fit everybody. Whereas me dressed up in this with a cloth cap and my heart will open a lump of cheese in my pocket, and they give you a Colt 45 by the Wembley, and the army call them Webleys. And they fire around as big as a cotton rail. See, so I get this in my pocket and half a dozen shells, and now the station we go, me, this bloke Pettit, and boarded the train. When we got on here, it's filled up with Irishmen with the upside down pipe sitting around in the coach. I was all looking at us, and they knew exactly what we've got, army boots and socks and all, and so you can tell how well disguised we was. So they're all looking. I got me in on my cannon, because I said if I'd pulled the trigger, they'd let the trainer come up the line. That's the sort of report you had. A stop elephant, they would, if it was charging one of these things. But anyway, finally we got to Limerick, and the sergeant said, what have you got to eat? I said, well, we've got a lump of cheese and a lump of bread in here. I said, a bit of... So he said, well, chuck it away, he said, we've got to, I'll take you somewhere and we'll feed you up while you're here. He said, it looks if you can do a bit, because he's a cold skinny in the army. So anyway, they had a good old stew, you know, meat stew. They give us a bus to, and of course we got on the train, come back, and no more. We didn't have any bother, but it was a sort of being like one of these undercover men on that particular journey. Nobody won.
When you had your stepfather, you know, did life go on pretty much as you've described it before until you joined the army, or did anything else?
Yes, no, it went on just the same until I got 14. There used to be murders in that house, and we moved all round the show. As I said, I went with nearly every school in Newham, including the ones that have. Now out of existence, such as Channelsea, and now of course the one years ago around the world we lived, Sarway School, also Carpenter's Road. I don't think that exists anymore, and of course all the rest of them, from Bromley by Bow, by the Seven Stars Old Palace, to St Lennon's Road farther down, and then coming right up to Stratford, went to Three Mills in Abbey Lane.
Yeah. When you joined the army when you were young, didn't you?
Yep. I was joined 1920. When I walked the Wally first, I got fed up with all this bashing and crashing. First of all, I went working. Now, I got to work first. At 14, I used to run around and get a job easy. You should leave a card outside, take the card here, and say you want to buy stuff. The first job I had was for Benjamin O'Time. In Leadenhall Street, and they dealt in turkeys and, you know, poultry, in the poultry market. Oh no, it wasn't. The first one I had was at Lusty's, at Bow. And I had the job of cleaning the edges off, you know, the machines cut the edges off the flames as they went through. They was piecework, I was getting all the money. See, so they expect me to run about like a racehorse to keep the grooves clear, so that the machine could get about with this. They might give me tuckers at the end of the week. But
how old were you then?
I just left school, left 40. As I was just selling, I got out of shorts, just wear knickerbockers then. And, got out of shorts and put on my first pair of trousers, long trousers, and they were made by my mate's wife, who incidentally was a coloured, he was a Negro. Although he was in England, actually, but his mother was a Negro, his father was white, and I used to go around in the house and she used to give me bread and butter, whatever they had. The first mate I ever had in these days, Darky Pearson, you've heard me talk of him, and it was the first pair of long trousers I ever had, and that's where they came from. I got this job, Benjamin O'Time, and I thought, well, I've got ducks and chickens and all things around me. You know, I thought, well, we'll have a duck. seems so. Of course, I put the stack out towards it. When it's time to go home, of course, I'll get it out. And, of course, at that particular time, the Metropolitan Station in Aldgate and the Aldgate East Station were separate. You had to get out of one station and walk to the other one, not run like you do now. So, of course, I came down to there, and I passed Aldgate Station itself, and I got to Aldgate East, where I used to live at Plaster, in, and Margaret Street. And, of course, I thought, well, this old, an old smell. Cool. I thought it must be bad, see. So it had been raining. And on the other side was the Minories, and there's the A Market, it's called it the A Market in one corner, and the pub on the other. So anyway, I guess he's duck out and skates it in Knox Hill Street. You know how a stone skates across the top of a pond? Just how this duck slid across the top of this rainy road. And then those were Dick days. They used to have the tram on out the river, out in the middle of the road. So the tram used to stop out in the middle of the road. If you wanted to get on, you used to get risk it and run over, run out and get on the tram. Nobody had the idea about you ought to put trams in the curb where the people was. You got to run out, the conductor either hold up the people or if he didn't feel like it, he didn't. So anyway, I skates this duck across the road when I got home and told Mother about it. I don't know, she said there's nothing the matter with that. She said that was all right. Anyway, so of course the Raza fights were still going on, and I worked there for a time. Then I got home, there's no graft, there's murders all night long, no sleep, no proper meals. I got fed up with that. I left it, so I thought, well, I've got to work anyway. So the next job I got was previous to that, I had a job in the working for the City London Corporation. Now, you had to run after horses and clear up all their muck, you know, and dump them in bins. Well, the first step I went to was up Thames Street. Stony Lane. That's down Pettigate Lane, the depot down there. What is Pettigate Lane now? And I was on the Minories cleaning up. And I cleaned it all up, and I was sitting on my scoop, like outside the bin we chucked it. And had a bloke foreman come round, he's like, Bacon Ponson, I heard it was calling. And I heard him say, oh, this is where you waste your time. I said, oh, don't waste any time, I said. I wasted time, I said, the road wouldn't be as clean as this, would it? I said, it didn't do itself, did it? See, I mean, even then, I was quick on the uptake when I was young. I mean, everybody tried to come the old acid. I said, I'll tell you something else, I said, I've left. So I'll say what I like now. I said, you can't give me the sack. I said, because I've left. So, of course, down in the depot goes. And he said, well, you work on for a little while, he said. So I said, I ain't work on for no little while, I said. He said, well, work on a little while, he said, but it wasn't too bad. See, I'll get muck it up for you. Now I went from that depot to the other one. Went one at Upper Thames Street. Now, one of the beats of Upper Thames Street was on the Billingsgate Fish Market. See, where they used to start at 3 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock in the morning, imagine it. Because I worked there, and got up, caught the 20 past train out of Plaster to get down there and open up at 3 o'clock. So the first train out it was. Well, anyway, I was on Billings getting this to go around. He used to greet me, see the stuff chucked away. So I used to wander around the market on the scrounge, seeing if I could find fish, no matter what it was, earrings or, you know, dream or addict, they had it all. And I said, get out of what, I couldn't take it home. So one day I'm having a march around, the bloke said, I've got a flirt man, and he said, Swain, name was, now I remember it now. And he said to me, he's a gardener, he had a straw, they said, a straw hat on, and whatever. So I was standing there, go up and run. So of course, all the stuff they had on the show, they said, throw away afterwards. Not sell it, because if anybody bought anything, they give a porter a ticket, and they tell the customer to go along with him, and they take a case off of a bin and put it on his cart. They say, where are you? He say, well, over so and so, the cart it over there. It was up to you, they had to get a barrel and push it up there, fed the lot of it. So I was standing, and he said, how's like work with me, son? So I said, how much? See, it was the main article at my time, and me being the chief wage earner. Was the money. So I said, how much? He said, well, he said, I'll sell it 25 bob. I can't believe my years, I wouldn't let on, no.
What were you getting at the time?
15 bob. And the doggies were only getting about 9 bob if they got called on. You know, I was a bloke downstairs to me, got about 2 days' work a week in there, and I'm an upkeeper. And 25 bob, and that man was a smasher. As a governor, I used to go over his house, take fish home to his wife, shepherd's bush he lived, knocked at the door, rang the bell, knocked at the door, rang the bell, doesn't matter. And the maid had opened the door, and you know, I'd go. And they'd feed me up on tea and cakes, and you know, I've got quite one of the family. She was real concerned. See, I never tell none of them about me Greeks and finger me bubs. But of course, when I got back and the governor, I said to him, I said, "Will you chuck all that stuff away?" He said, "All right, me take some home." He said, "Take a lot home." He said, so I said, "Well, you got any bags, anything I can put them in?" So he said, "Well, no." He said, "We don't exactly stock bags," he said. "But I'll tell you where you can get some." He says, "You go over to dry fish market, that's where they've got the crabs and prawns and, you know, all the rest of the plava, the winkles and shrimps and all that, call that dry fish market. The wet fish market is where everything went." So I went over there and Mr. Searle, I think his name, I forget his name now. But I said, "Can I?" Mr. Swain said, "I'll ask you if you've got a couple of straw bags to let me have." So he said, "You don't want anything else, no fish and nothing?" I said, "Well, no." I said, "I'll be honest." I said, "But I do." So he said, "What would you like?" he said. So I said, "Well, look at the crabs and lobsters." So I said, "I'll have a load of prawns, I think, for a start." He said, "What do you mean for a start?" I said, "Well, I don't like them." I said, "I'll start on something else, can't I?" So he said, "What would you like?" I said, "Well, I've been used to winkles," I said, "and shrimps, have some of them." So I had some, when I went back, I said, "Mr. So his name told me that he has the bags," he said. "And he wanted to know if you wanted anything." He said, "Matter of fact," he said, "I wanted a lobster." He said, "I went to tell you," he said. "A lobster." So of course over I went, I said, "Mrs. Swain said he wants a lobster." So he said, "Did you want anything?" So, because that's how he used to do it, you know, to one another. So he said, "No, not today." He said, "Maybe I will tomorrow." He said, "See you tomorrow, son." So these people, they was, I was a cry would left the job, I had to finish. Anyway, I went back and had his two bags, and home I used to go. And I used to get the bags from him and take the best part of the fish, what they used to chuck away, because the old tramps who lived in lodging houses and all the rest of it, they used to come round and, you know, they knew what was chucked away, and that's where they used to get their grub for. So I mean, they lived in lodging, they've got no home, got no nothing. It's not much better now or something. I mean, the lodging houses and the Salvation Armies and all these places, right now, houses are all full up with them. So, I'll take it when I get all this phlegm up in that. So, of course.
Is there any break now, a cup of tea then?
Well, I'll finish this off. And, of course, when I see all this stuff, I've got the bags and filled them up with fish, took them out. Now, I should get fish every day. You know, whatever I want, I could take anything, you know, take it all. Or I could take it away, and then, of course, one day I couldn't get any bags. So I don't know, I thought to myself, how am I going to do this? So I had an old coat used to work in. So of course you could coat, size the sleeves up a bit, you know. And I'll plunks in there, herrings and bream and cod and all sorts of coats I could get hold of, you know, filled it up. Herrings, brats, kept them sticking out of the pocket because they was flat like. So down I goes and you see, damn it, what's going to happen? Oh, it is. And I get them on the underground, like, and there it goes. A drop of water coming out of them, and nothing must have noticed. See? Well, there come a day then, oh, it'll be quite a while, and I was, you know, there was a real smashing firm, it's supposed to be. Well, I struggled, got home, murder. Every night was the same. He's come home blind drunk. He was a drunken monster. He was a tall dick and corny. And you used to get murdered, used to go home and you couldn't get in the kitchen to get any grub. Mum used to try and sneak in the bedroom. I mean, he knew I was in there. And he used to have the same old backing down the door, and cups and flying about. And one day when I went in, I said, "Well, I'll take some fish home." So I got to make a plate of cake, you know me. So anyway, I just fancied half a case of whitey, you know, the little Alex, see. And it was in the box. So I said, "Well, I'll take the box." Bought a car, ain't nothing else. So I drags it along till I got the Mark Lane Underground. So I goes and drags it down the stairs, and onto the tube, stands up in the corner. Of course, and all the ice and that's all melting, running all over the floor. Well, I had to use my coat this time, because before I got to Bow Road, the ice and that was all running out, everywhere was flooding, everybody was looking. So I took my coat off and tied up the sleeves and bung as much as I could get in. Into my coat and chucked a box out on the line. Of course, I was that young that I didn't know I could do a lot of damage with that box on that underground line. But anyway, I got him out. Of course, after a while, it got so bad that, I just said, well, I'll have to leave. So, you know, of course, I left. Well, I was out of work for a couple of days, I suppose, and
what was bad?
Mate?
What was bad? Why did you leave the job?
Because of the life I had at home. I had no sleep, no food. I couldn't, because you remember, I used to be up here at about half past 12. Well, you wouldn't call that getting up, would you? Catch the 20 past one train out of Plaistow. It was the market that used to be open at 3 o'clock, and there was no motors then. All used to come up by railways, which were separate at that particular time. There was Lanark East and Lanark West and the Great Northern and Southern and you name it, there they were. And of course, our stuff used to come down to Fleet now. Swain, I think he had his own boat as well. And of course, the railway bands was waiting for us when we got there. So the people, the tradesmen used to be down at Margate, buy their fish, and they used to open their shop up at 8 o'clock in the morning, before that, some of them. And that fish was as fresh as it came straight from that market, which it did. That's the time. That's why. Well, when I got home, I used to get home, we should finish about up past 9. Sometimes I might run a couple of errands in there if you wanted me to. We'll take straight home, and then you say, well, make your way home from there, wherever you shepherd's bush. There's the money, give me the fare and all the rest of it. And I might get home up past 10, 11, and it'd be late. But I ain't got to get up about past 12. You can't sleep with those. First is a rail outside, for a start, and then him in there for seconds. And after he'd been up the pub, he'd come home, and just to keep going, it'll start me to go to work. I just couldn't stick it. I'd had enough of that. See, that's why I left it, because it was a matter of compulsion. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I left that. The next job I get is Bishop's, Moore Son and Bishop's, where I was in St. Bartholomew's Hospital. I look out the window from the ward and see the place where I used to work. A little alleyway there, but it was a firm there called Bishop's, and they used to make tin boxes, barometers and clinical thermometers, and they also used to repair siphons and seltzer jeans. That's the things you squirt in the wallop, you know. And of course, a card outside, and I walked in, Mr. Holmes. And he said, yes, son, he said you can come and start with me, he said. So I said, and the money, sir? So he said, yes, he said, I think I can pay you 22 shillings, I think it was. Well, it wasn't much of a drop. It was a cleaner drop, only about $3. And I was just giving her the most, only skip a dollar, give her a pound, there's a lot of money then. Of course, she needed it for herself and the others, see? And me, of course. So I started 22 bob. Oh no, a pound, that's it, a pound a week. You start me for, not 22 bob. So he said, when you start? So we'll start in the morning. So when I went up, and there was a good firm, there was only about 10 or a dozen work there, you know, the foreman, down the foreman, and then there was the office. But it was his daughter used to work in the office, and the typist. She was a great girl, she was. A real, my idea of a lady, she was. That girl, because I was only a kid, remember, she would be about 20, 22, I suppose, something like that. And she worked there, and of course they treat you like one of your own. I said, my job was to take out and deliver the stuff, you know, what they made. Like, I used to go to Victoria Wine Company and bring home a load of siphons or whatever it was, and they wanted repairing. See, the girls had busted in the middle, so they wouldn't squirt, see. Or I'd take out a load of thermometers. So Moore Son and Sons, Aldersgate Street, where all the hospitals used to have them, they used to deliver them to the hospitals. See, in the Bromwich, the school's different places. To go right up in the West End, Bayswater, all over the place, I used to go. On the other trike, just come down over the hill, you know, with feet stuck on the top of a bar like this. See? And of course, get down the bottom of Gammages used to be there then. And as you come down.
Back to town.
Actually, as you come down over an hill, coming, saw it going up. As I was going up here, I'd look round and see if there was a car and horse about. If there was, I said, wait a minute, come. And then the older changey pulled up the hill, see? It pulled up right past Grazing Road, you know, getting towards, what's it? Down to a bar following me. Then, of course, we're coming back, as you get down to Auburn Hill, and put a bit on top, go down about an mile and you've got a sharp left-hand turn, the bottom turn into Atton Garden, see? Of course, from out and gone, I could work my way through Charles Street and across Farringdon Street into Bartholomew Close, see, because only round the back of it used to be Smithfield Market, getting there anyway. I mean, I knew all the ways. Got round the corner and up the curb, used to go across the road, crash, straight into the railings. Well, the truck used to be in repairs for about 3 weeks. See, the rapid it was in Grazing Road, it's that taking him here, say, out of his set. So it looks a bit of a mishap. And you know, after I'd done a journey, I'd done my work, I used to have a comic and sit on my saddle there reading a comic, and all of a sudden the voice behind me would say, oh, this is where you do the work, is it? So of course I looked round and I don't know how, and I called her Miss Holmes. So then she'd say, I've done my work, I said, I've got time to peruse this comic. So she said, I expect you have. She says, you're perusing it, the looks of it. She said, let me have a peruse. So I said, you sit on there. So I sit on the saddle. I said, I'll get on the top. She said, I suppose it's last week. So I said, well, I don't. I said, it's this week's. I don't have last week's. I said, I've read that already. Tiny Tim and Chattles, and, you know, they send people in there. So, of course, she said, sit on the tummy. I never told her old man. I mean, she did, because her old man was a gentleman and all. Well, I hadn't been there very long, and I got a Christmas box, I'd done my wages. Well, the pound was a load of my money then. Mm. You see, he didn't give me tuppence, he gave me a pound. And so I had £2 to draw as a Christmas box. I know a chap named Brown, called him Lottie Brown, he lived at Tottenham. And he said to me, why don't you come work at Tottenham? Nah, I said, I'm going to watch West End. He said, we're playing away this week, he said, why don't you come home? He said, get a bit of grub. He said, Mum, get a bit of grub. It's all right. So in I went, and they had one of those houses where you went at the back over at Edmonton. And of course, the pitch wasn't far away, White Hart Lane, you know, Tottenham. Well, she gave us a feed at the bar, and we went to Tottenham. Now, one of the blokes in the firm, I forget his name now, he used to do bets on the pool, the odds for picking out so many teams. And he picked out a team to get the correct. The highest score, and it was Tottenham Hotspur. So that was one of the reasons why I went. So of course we went to there, and now they won 6-0. They beat Lincoln City. I'll never forget this. 6-0. They beat Lincoln City, and do you know what? They could have had 66. They were passing in front of the goal. You know they were. Of course, when I got home, you know the team that I backed along with that man, Shilling. Oh, Douglas, his name was, the bookmaker. Dougie never owes. That was his motto. It was Tottenham we beat. And there I watched them chucking away. And another team, Bradford City, got out six as well as us. So although we wrote the sport in life, and they said, well, it's got to be absolute top scorer. And unfortunately, Bradford City's got the same. So we got nothing. And I was watching Tottenham Hotspur pass it on a goal line where they just as well kicked it in.
Do you know what year that was?
About 1915, I suppose. Might have been, no.
No, it must have been later than that.
No, it was later than that.
Because you were 16, you were born in 1904,
would it be 1920? Oh, yeah, of course, I'm mixing up here a bit.
1920, wouldn't it?
No, it wouldn't be 1920. I was in the army then.
Oh, 1920 goes from January to December, yeah. Doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it might have been in the
army. You weren't in the army from there, didn't
but
you?
But anyway, it could have been that, or it could have been the day before that. The year before, when I was 15, I think that was it. I was about 15 then, because I've still got more jobs to come. And so, of course, the next job I had was, I worked for a meat hockey. And I used to take the meat round, I forget the name of this place, and exactly where it was. But I used to take the meat round to the hotels to cook for the staff, you know. And then I should take a meeting, I'll be in the lift.
Why did you leave the place that made the thermometers and so on?
Same thing. They were light up at home. No grub, no sleep, no nothing. I mean, I was made of iron, but I could stick anything, but it was getting me down. It was. That's what made me just decide to join the army. Oh, I worked for, Brown and Mays, another lot. And this was the same sort of, well, it was, you know, casual work, hunting this and doing that. And they used to issue vouchers, like 8 tickets, and you could get a cup of tea and so many biscuits, like lunchtime. Mm-hmm. But these days, you sort of subsidised them. You know, I worked there for a time, and, well, I chucked that up as well. And I think I was finished up working. I was working for Holmesy, I think, when I finished. I don't know a couple of firms, but I can't remember them. But anyway, I decided to join the army, so I marched down to Worley, and the bloke said, how old are you? I said, well, 18. Obviously, I didn't know that, 19, so he knew it. He said, well, he said, have you got your firearm permission? I said, yeah, I said. So he said, well, if I was you, he said, I'd make sure, he said, you go home and ask your father, he said. So he made me out a return warrant from Worley to Plasto, because I live in Margaret Street, see. Yeah, it's from there, because they finished the war in Margaret Street, and took part in the tea party down there. You know, they had barrel organs in out of the street, and they set fire to the French. She's a barrel shop up the top. They got all the barrels out there, just rolling down the street and making big fun pies. Everybody was going mad, like when the armistice and all. We lived down here, so that's the time it was, 1915. Or 1914, actually, but when the job came, it was after that. Of course, I worked at Brighton & Mays as well. And then I think from there I decided to go and join the army. So I walked down to Worley, and so I said to the sergeant, said, how old are you? And I said, 18. And he said, well, have you got your father's permission? And I said, yes. He said, well, you better go and he said, make sure. So he made me out a return warrant. I went home and I told Mum I was going to join the army. And of course the next day I went, army out, and I went down to him. So he said, what regiment do you want to go in? Oh, I don't know. I said, what regiments are there? So I started to read them out. The Auburn and Fusiliers, the Durhams, the Essex, the Sussex, the Somersets, the Island Light Infantries, and Duke of Yorks and Leicesters. And he went all round the block until he got to the Northamptons one. Never heard of this. I've read about most of the others, but I never heard of the Northamptons. So I thought, that's a long way away. What I wanted really was a ride out in the country, see how the furry wheat was growing stalks. That's what the kids used to reckon in London, that Winkle's growing stalks in the country. Yeah, so, of course, the sunny hours run out of Euston to Castle Street, Northampton. But the remarkable thing about this gym was, I left it as long as I could. I told them I was going to join, I left it as long as I could before I decided to go. And when I went, when I got out of Castle Street Station, I'd been there before. And I'd never been in that place, you know. I've never been in that place in my life. And do you know, I recognised buildings and I made my way to that depot as if I knew the place. I didn't have to, it was getting dark late at the night. And I walked down the High Street, the depot was in the High Street actually. And the trams run by. But I made my way down to that depot and the bloke was on guard. He never had a rifle, they don't have a rifle, it's not in town like that. He had a stick walking up and down at the gate like, you know, and I said, Northamptonshire resident depot, mate. He said, yeah. So I come in and I reported, he said, better report the sergeant. So I did. He said, well, there's a bunker over there. He said, where all the newly enlisted men, he said, are joining. He said, you better go up there. He said, see who's up there and get yourself a bed and that for tonight. Of course, that's what I've done. That's how I come to join it. And about 3 months, about 3 months training. Now I went to chasing the Irish all round.
How long did you sign up for?
9 and 3.
What's that?
9 years of service, 3 years with the colours, 9 years reserve, and 3 years reserve, and then done 3 more on top of that. But the point was that See, now where they made a muck up, I should have been treated as a boy. See, because although he'd accepted me as 18, and it should have been the colours, it should have been 7 and 5. Yeah. See, a boy.
But you raised down as 18, though.
Yeah, but he made a bloomer. I put me, but when I got there, I was treated as a man, not a boy. Mm. I was on man's pay straight away. Yet on my, Freddie said 9 and 3 boys contract. See, so really, I could have gone in the band or anywhere. I did have a year and a go in the band.
So despite saying you're 18, you got the contract a boy would get.
That's it. But I got the 9 and 3 one. See, mm. And I wasn't. I wasn't 18. But anyway, they put me on as a...
Which one's a man and you was a boy?
18's a man. Yeah. Under 18's a boy, see?
Yeah, but
I told them I was 18. They should have given me a man's contract, but they didn't. They gave me a boy's
one. They must have known that you wasn't.
Well, they didn't make no difference to me.
Tell
them
about
didn't
when
even
you,
make any
when you mutinied then.
Oh, blimey. So I got up in the barrack room, and it was all just enlisted men up there, you know. So... we've done one or two parades, you know, go downstairs and get fitted up with kit and all the rest of it, go to the stores and draw this and that and everything else that. And one day, belting down the bleeding rain. Well, if they wanted you to go on no parade, they said the bugle sound no parade today, see? So of course you wouldn't go out. But if they didn't think it was raining hard enough, they'd blow overcoats, see, on the bugle, see? Well, they blew overcoats, see?
Yeah.
And it was belting down a bleeping rain. Thought, I ain't going out in it. When I saw one or two of them getting ready to go out, I said, you must be a load of mags. I said, going out in it. I said, you won't get me out in it. I said, you want to go out and get wet? I said, that's up to you. So they said, well, we're getting trouble, don't we? I said, I can't help about that. I said, I'm going to get in trouble anyway. So, of course, they all went by me. There's a little tiny sergeant major come up. I didn't know him then. They called him PH. Yeah. But he apparently was made up on the field. He was a great guy. He was only a little bloke, about 5 foot something he was. And he come and sat on the side of the bed and he said, you know Lissouf? He said, he used to call me Lissouf. He said, you know Lissouf? He said, if there was a war on, he said, I could shoot you for mutiny. So I said, well, great, I ain't a war on, I said, because I ain't fell in. He said, not have you decided not to go and praise yourself, he said. You've been telling other people not to, he said. That's incitement to mutiny, see. So I said, well, I wasn't trying to incite anybody to mutiny. I said, oh, I'm telling them, I ain't going to go out in the rain. Get around it, see. There's army rules and regulations, they're a code of their own. The rules are their own. So he said, and he spoke to me like a mum and a father, he said. And these are things you mustn't do, he said, because you'll get more trouble in the yards, Paul, he said, for this. So, of course, I finally come round. Anybody come out there bawling on them, I told them to go forward. I forgot about it. See, but he spoke to me just like a father would, or better than a father, because I didn't have a father. And anyway, of course, whatever he said, of course, I got on all right. I did all right because, I mean, what I thought, my way of thinking was, if he can do it, so can I. See, I wasn't so good at it, but I knew time would take care of that.
That was the first suit he wore
that
with everything to match, wasn't
that's it? That's what I said. I said to him, I said to the Sergeant Major, I said, you know what, sir, I said, this is the first time I've ever had a suit the same colour. I said, so I've been a red jersey, I said, and knickers, I said, and a blue ribbon in the workhouse. Get a blue ribbon all the, get a red ribbon all the week. Said, no, blue ribbon all the week. I said, that's the Tory party. And you get a lump of red. No, not then, I didn't, but that's what it is. And on Sundays, when you go to Sunday school, church, they give a bit of red ribbon. You should have a rubber collar and a piece of red ribbon around your neck.
And the ribbon all the way around like a tie.
And then, tie a bow in the front. Well, during the place, I was at a place called Savvy's Gons, incidentally, when I was in a workhouse, and you've got to go back again for this. And everybody had a job. There's about 14 kids in the hutch, and everybody had a job. And my job, was the first one, was cleaning windows outside. And this old cow, she didn't like the idea of just a fine thought about it. I hadn't done the corners. Yeah. See, and I had a pair of steps like doing the corners. And it was in the winter, mind you. So I thought, I'll get off of this. I'll get off of this job. So I shoved the steps over, lays on the ground, hollers in hoots. He knows it, I've been murdered. She comes rushing out. She said, you clumsy lout, she said. See, now, if anybody she going to give me a kind word, I must probably cried or something like that. But anyway, she called me a clumsy lout. She said, I can't trust you to do anything, she said. And if I leave you on it, she said, you'll most probably get injured and I shall get the blame. So she said, I've got to take you off of that job. So the bloke who was doing the taters, he called us Bud in the vernacular. He used to leave the eyes in. So she said, well, I'll put you on peeling the potatoes, she said, because you don't take the eyes out. Well, I took the eyes out, but it wasn't no spot left on. I got through with it, so I got the chat over there. Then she shoved me on another job that I liked. Well, you imagine 14 pairs of kids in the winter going for all the paddles they can find and mud, and I've got to clean their shoes. That's my job. See, so anyway, I ducked up a few of them.
How old were you when you did this?
Well, this was in the early parts, I suppose, about 9, I suppose, something like that, 10, maybe.
That's when you used to pinch the stuff off the damn waste?
No, that's in Langley House, that was. That was the best place I went to. I was going to school then. That was prior to this, I told you that, didn't I? I'm going to get to that in a minute, anyway, that assault is that. But anyway, she shoved me on to clean the shoes. Of course, you couldn't clean them properly. Okay, mate. Mm-hmm. You couldn't clean mud in that hall, but it wasn't good enough for her. And I knew it wasn't going to be. But she didn't get the satisfaction of inspecting them because I put my own shoes on and about 3 o'clock in the morning I departed. Look, stole away, as the Egyptians, as the Arabs say. So, of course, I stole away and went out to Mum and then I said, well, I'll go and see my aunt now. Allow. Well, they come straight over there because that's where I should run pretty every time because there's always a welcome and a feeling there, but she used to go and answer the door. She used to come in to say the man's come.
Did you take the pills?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you took them.
What time is it? Oh, we'll have them now. Yeah. There's a red case in here, isn't it? Alright.
Yeah.
Well, prior to this leaving with the boots, I'd also had a job earlier on, and it was making the beds, helped to make, beeswax in the floor, that's it, galloping around with that. But we used to have to go to church every Sunday, and there's a little church, I don't know whether it's still there now, over Beckton, near Beckton Park, right opposite, it's been there donkeys years it had, top of Savage Garden, Beckton. And we used to have to go to church every Sunday in the morning and in the afternoon. Well, I used to pump up the organ for the parson, see? And, because he wasn't in pumper up. And he used to bring me sweets. So, of course, one day he said, well, I haven't got any sweets today, John. He said, I'll give me the money, he'll give me a penny. And all the other kids were there, they come copper on, you know. So, of course, I thought, well, I ain't going home with ever to nick the penny. Well, good, I'll wade my way around Cypress Place. Well, that's on the right to what used to be the ferry, the free ferry. The road that led to it, and they had sweet stuff shops around here, and I bought myself a Spanish, sick espargola, with one of them springs on the top, and a sweet ball, and I had to blow up until I got out of puff, and I ate it, see. And I'd done all right. The time I got home, because she wanted to know where I'd been. See, she didn't know, because the other kids had told her. See, so she cracks me on the ear with a pudding. Wooden spoon. You know one of them wooden spoons? It gripped me on the head with it and broke it. So I achieved a sort of a notoriety as a boy whose head was harder than the porridge spoon, see? So of course. Yeah, that's right. So of course then I get sentenced to bed. Now this, in my opinion, this is what they do to murderers. Solitary confinement. Now they find the quietest part in the house, and if you've got an house that holds about 12 or 14 kids, you've got quite a few rooms in it. And all the windows was frosted, and the walls were yellow and green. I always remember this lot. And the windows were open, and there wasn't a sound. Now, they said, put you to bed. All you done any work, it puts you to bed. And if you lay there, especially weekends, If you lay there all day long, an able and alert-minded child, that's purgy. There's no doubt, no books or anything, not a soul in there. You can't read or look at anything. You just lay it in and look around. You don't have to drive your balmy. See, I didn't get to drive balmy, and I had a few of these capers. So anyway, of course, she used to have her door open so she could hear, see? And on the table, she used to have a load of fruit, like bananas and grapes and all that, see? Of course, I've got fearful ideas in me again, like about these apples and grapes and that. They was annoying me, like being in the same place. Of course. These apples being in the same place and grapes, I thought, well, I could move some of them. So about 2:30, 8 o'clock, we used to chill it. You know, because about two, I suppose it was. I got out of bed and crawled on my hands and knees round up in the room. She was fast, though. And I sticks me hand up like open, and I've got a load of grapes and a pear, I think it was. So, of course, I scarred was back and had a nosh up. And I went to the lavatory and I washed the pear core down there. And the bits I got out of the grape washed them down the lavatory, see? I had that up in the lavatory. And of course the war was going on, and I used to have a map. I used to take the map in the lavatory, put a light on, bolt the door like as if I was busy, and trace the map of the Allies, like as they was going across Europe in the war. See, well then of course it got to the boat episode, and of course I departed. So when I got home, I went to home, and of course, well, I also go by an answer, I tell you. And over there, the bloke comes, and of course, back I go until I finally finished up, but coming home until he got fed up running about me. But previous to this, I went to Langley House. It was from there that I went down to Hutton in Essex. Because Langley House was a good place, you know, it was they were, well, human beings in there. There's one great big fat woman with a red face, you poor little sod, she used to say to me. Yeah, you took a fancy to me. She used to bring me in bullseyes and them clover things, you know, clover sweets. And I used to think the world of her, and they made me up for me in the dormitory. I was sat all right, quiet down there, like if I was talking when it's time to go to sleep, see. And one thing, she had a window here, and her room backed onto the dormitory. Anyway, they made me up looking at the dumb waiter that come up from the ground, you know, the thing we all pull the rope and up it come. And then I was on it for the dinners and things like that. Well, funny enough, I thought we should put a lump of pudding up my shirt or a couple of spuds, anything like that, because I never got enough grub, see. Although my brother was in there with me, George at the same time, and they used to get us on a box singing, thing to do it, and we couldn't be so bad at it because there was often encores. And at that particular time, they brought down a first Zeppelin, a Billericay, a Lieutenant Leaf of the Air Force. He got over the top of the Zeppelin and dropped a bomb on it and set it alight. You see, and well, actually, I was home at that particular time, and you could see them jumping out because they would never have any parachutes in. They hadn't got round to making parachutes. Anyway, we used to give them this song. And then I was on the dumbwaiter, and I used to get spuds in it and pudding, and I had a girlfriend. Well, how I got this girlfriend was, I'd done something or other, and they stood me up in a corner near the French windows. Well, the backyard was round the side, so to speak. You know, you entered from the front, the main road. But the playground, the asphalt, was on the side of the house, with a wall preventing you, because if you want to scoop, you've got out of the wall easy. So, of course, my brother was there, my girlfriend. Now I've got I looked through the French windows, like, and there's a bloke pulling her hair, a girl named Martha Roberts. I've never forgotten this. So, of course, I sailed out and landed him a portly one, and that was it. All the attendants rushed out, and, of course, I was the cause of the trouble, which I was, no two ways about it. So I got stood up in the corner again for an indefinite period, or it was. Anyway, I still had my job on this, so of course when it's finished, I used to get the spuds, creep round the corner, because there was like a, it went round in an half moon shape, the playground. So round the corner, and Julie and my girlfriend, we used to go and have a feed up there. Well, that was all right until they sent me down to Arden in Essex with that lot. I was doing, I was taught everything. Then they taught you bootmaking and how to plow the field and scatter. They grew all their own grub and all the rest of it. But they didn't have, what shall we say, coaches or people that treat you like human beings. It was all this whip and whistle larks. Even I was the last one to buckle down to that because I'd had worse than at home. Of course.
Would you check my case up again? Thanks, sir.
Right. Yeah, see, well, I'm on doing a last doing something or other, and I got such a bang around the ear, it made me itchy, you know, ring like there were a lot of bells, and I just simply turned around by more instinct and tapped the last head, like I've been put. So he slung and caught him in the ear off one, and he knocked his head off. Anyway, they held me down, and they walloped the daylights out of me, you know, and the old one bloke said, Frenchmen don't cry, I thought myself. I was crying, but this was with rage. If I'd have been as big as him, I'd have strangled a lot of them. I would, but anyway, of course, the end is the same as, what's it? It was at the other places. I got out in the night and hopped it, and I walked all the way home. See then? Well, then when they took me back again, they found me in my aunt's down here, Frith Road, as usual, where I used to go for a feed. Because Mabby used to move all over the place, and if I went to where she used to be, she wasn't there. Same thing applied when I went in the army, because I know the capers he must have got up to when I went in the army.
That must have been awful.
Well, it was worse than awful. Anyway, I went home and went to my aunt's, and the bloke came. I heard a knock at the door, and she said, "The man's outside for you, John." Anyway, the man come in, and she gave him a cup of tea and all that, and he wasn't a bad bloke. His people walked me up, was going along. And then mother sent me a letter, and she had a penny, put a penny stamp in it. Well, they had a tuck shop, as they called